for like
for four years.
Yeah, but none of the majors.
Not in a major.
None of the majors, you know.
Mike, stand your ground, Mike. Don't let them push you around.
Are you kidding me? This is like, this is fun for me. This is just toss it 100% out there and watch people.
I have to assume that this is like the growing pains of a sport becoming bigger is kind of separating what's what when it comes to big events. But I like what you're saying. I like what you're saying with the majors, right? Because, I mean, is there really a big difference between the European Open and the UK Open or the Hanoi Open? Not really, right?
So what you're looking for, you know, in a lot of cases is history, right?
Prestige and history.
Yeah, so but you have to start someplace. I mean, it's certainly prestige and history. And let's, for the sake of argument, you know, I posted this list today, which had all sorts of stuff on it. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, you just want to stick to WNT, which I think would be smart by them to establish their own hierarchy like that now. Sure. And then basically you're kind of taking the World 8 Ball, the World 10 Ball, to China. You're kind of all shoving them off to the side, which is, you know, that's, if they're selling 9 ball, then that's what they really kind of almost need to do. Right. And so,
well, they didn't even announce Kachi winning the World 10 Ball, right? They wouldn't even acknowledge that in the.
Right. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, that's their prerogative, and that's fine. The players know what they've won, and it's important to them. It'll be on his resume forever. But, you know, if you want to just stick with WNT, you've got two events that are historically significant, and the World Championship and the U.S. Open, right? So, you know, if you're going to, I believe they're going to be all in for a good enough period of time to establish one or two other events, and just say that these are marquee events. Add, you know, 20 grand more to each one of those two extra events. And if you're making a global sport, you know, pick the UK Open and the Asian Open or Hanoi Open or whatever you have to call it. I hate that it would be the Hanoi Open, only in that it pigeonholes you to one city. Right. Mm-hmm. One tournament title, and you want something that's going to last forever. So if they could find a way to call it the Asian Open without getting sued by the WPA, then that's what I would prefer. I would say, let's go UK Open or European Open. Asian Open. And then, well, I don't think you have to worry too much about them ever going out of the UK. So, you know, that's something that will have some legs to it, some extended period of time to it. And you got the US Open. You got one on each of your three main continents that you're building the game into, and you've got your World Championship. And, you know, take those four. I mean, the World Championship, US Open, I don't think you have to do anything to. You could take the European Open / UK Open and Asia Open, whatever those two you pick, and do something a little bit different with the format or a little bit different with the prize money, and just, you know, find a way to add prestige to those events. And listen, it's not about trying to downgrade all the other events. It's not about that at all. It's about giving your sport credibility and legitimacy and giving it some historical perspective and giving someone's career some historical perspective. If you have, you know, if you're in golf and you're going to talk about the greatest golfers of all time, the first thing you're going to say is how many majors he won.
Yeah.
Okay. In pool, you say that. Some people say, well, he won 35. This guy won 42. This guy won 68. It loses impact.
Yeah.
It loses relevance. It loses significance. Right. So that's what my whole argument is about. It's not trying to, you know, downplay any event, but every event can't be the biggest thing in the world. Otherwise, none of them are anything.
But Mike, what about the Texas Open? So much history.
Well, I mean, the biggest argument, and I can have this with anybody because I could probably be swayed on this, is the Whirlpool Masters. That's where this whole thing started, was we're talking about the Whirlpool Masters. Now that's an event with history for sure. And has great players in it. And, you know, while none of the other sports have small invitational majors like that, snooker does. The Masters is 16 players, Chris, something like that. Okay. So they do that and they call it a major. And I guess
it was 24 a couple of years ago, though.
I guess
last year might have been 24.
The snooker one?
The snooker.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the Whirlpool Masters and pool, you know, I still have a little bit issue with, because I have an issue with a 16 player invitational single elimination event where four wins makes you the champion. Yeah. And no matter how tough the field is, and it's not even really 16 players on strict merit. Okay. So if you're going to take an invitational event and tinker with it to add promotional value, like a Vietnamese player and a Filipino player, I completely understand it. But to me, that does cut into the credibility of the field just a little bit.
Yep.
So those are my arguments. Not trying to get on anybody's bad side and not trying to just stir the pot for the sake of stirring the pot. This is an argument that I clearly feel somewhat passionately about, and is enough of a decent argument where you've got people arguing both sides of it. So that's what I enjoy about it.
I will say, Mike, you have done a more effective job of arguing against the Matrim position than even the WPA did. So credits to you.
Oh, I'm not trying to argue against anybody, really.
But I mean, you make valid points. You know, I think it's good just for the organizational side and structure side of the sport to kind of frame those things up and give, you know, players things to point at. You know, what's our Grand Slam? You know,
that's the way I want careers to be defined. You know, that's the way they are in other sports, and that's what makes them dramatic. It's like, you know, I saw a quote from someone who said, "Listen, if you're trying to have an argument on who's the greatest tennis player of all time, you got to look at who won the most majors." Right? Who won the most majors? And it shouldn't be in the 50s or 60s. It should, you know, and that's again where I have the problem with the Whirlpool Masters being looked at on the same level as far as your resume goes, titles go, as the World Championship or the US Open. I have a problem with that.
It's headed in the right direction, though, in terms
of 100%. And that's why I get so passionate and excited about it, because this is, to me, this has real potential for the World Nine Ball Tour to start putting more of those pieces in place that increase its relevance, that increase its historical perspective, that increase its power, all that stuff. That's all this stuff does to me, is make it more important. I'm not trying to lessen the importance of any event, but, you know, build it up the way a pro sport, an individual pro sport like this gets built up.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the steps that Matchroom have taken over the last few years with the Masters. You know, 24-person field, lots of wildish cards in there, and they've narrowed it. A couple of wild cards still, but that's just an iteration.
And the extended races. The extended races is enormous. I mean, you know, you look at the history of the Whirlpool Masters. Part of the reason I used to discount it out of hand was because it was races to eight.
Yeah.
Single elimination, 16 players, races to eight. Sorry, you just can't sell that to me.
Yeah,
but this is legitimate. I mean, it was a great tournament to watch, great matches. Yeah. You love the extended races. Nothing bad about the Whirlpool Masters at all.
So, Mike, just out of curiosity, so let's look at like what you said: the Asian Open, the European / UK Open, the US Open, and the Whirlpool Whirlpool Championships. Yeah. Those are the four majors in pool. You're looking at golf. Let's look at tennis. You have Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic all right in the 22 to 26 range, if I'm not mistaken. I think Nadal's 25, Djokovic is 26, Federer's 22 or 23.
Yeah.
Sounds right. So you could really make an argument for any of the three of those, but outside of that, you can't really make a great argument for anyone. What do you think, if those are the four majors, how many do you think realistically the greatest pool player of all time that started today could get to?
Run that by me again. How many, if those were the four, so, how many could someone get to?
So
you know what? It could be 10.
Yeah, double figures.
It could be, it could be 10 or 12. I mean, but that's what it is in golf. You look at
Tiger got to 14. I think Nicholas said
14, and that's like you think about 14 majors, right? You look at 14 or 15 majors in golf over a career that's 20 plus years.
Yeah,
that's when you look at the fields and how difficult it is to win one of those events. To me, that makes it all the greater. But if you were lumping the BMW Championship and Pebble Beach into his stuff, it just loses impact to me.
Yeah,
you're telling me the Waste Management Open isn't a big deal. Okay, so Chris, over under, if I gave you the next 50 years, would you take over or under 10 for the most majors won in pool?
Over.
No, I mean by one player.
Over.
Yeah,
you
over.
You take the over?
I'd take the over, yeah, just because, because of the filler factor, really.
What is filler at? He's got to be at four?
It almost starts with zero
if you're looking at
start right now, right?
If you're looking at World Nine Ball Tour, you look at the last couple of years.
So 2019.
Yeah, 2019. You could include. You may have only started with the two. You may have only started with the World Championship and the U.S. Open. It's okay. I mean, those get added to the equation. So maybe it didn't become three or four until 2 years later. You still include those, right?
Yeah.
So if the World Ball Tour started unofficially in 20 or whatever it was, 19, when they started adding open tournaments, you could start there. I don't. Yeah. That would be fine with me.
Over
a 20-year career, if you're playing from 22 to 42, I would think 10 or 12. Yeah. Maybe more if someone goes, someone just goes ballistic and, has several years like Fran had a couple of years ago, but that's, I think that would be great. I think that then you'd add some real historical significance to who the greatest players are.
Yeah.
And that's what tours and sports to me are always about, is like, it's not about the tour or the PGA or the WNT or the event. It's the champions.
Yeah. There has to be some legacy available for the greatest players. As the next few, it can't just be for everybody, but for the greatest ones, there has to be some sort of legacy available.
And I don't think there's any reason that the World Nine Ball Tour doesn't last, a couple of decades and has these events always as part of. Are they going to add more to them, or a couple are going to drop off, change places? Yeah, but take those core ones and make them special, make them your marquee, put a label on them, Grand Slam, Triple Crown, whatever you want to do, and make them special.
Yeah, so there's a couple. When we got our tour entry pack stuff, I think a couple of them are marked as blue ribbon events, the World and the US. And then there's a couple more that are marked as major. And that just really denotes the prize money that's available in them at the moment.
Yeah. And that's, there's ways to delineate those too, although you don't want to have too many labels.
They're all majors to us and to everybody else, aren't they? So
yeah, right.
I think the way a lot of the players think about it at the minute would be kind of a televised Matchroom event. So they are your majors at the moment, aren't they? They're exactly the tournaments you kind of called out or listed before. So if Matchroom are hosting the tournament themselves and it's on Sky TV, it's pretty much a major.
And I don't care. You can keep calling those majors, but pick out four of them and call it the Grand Slam.
Sure.
And that's how many Grand Slam events did you win? That's fine too. You want to call that? But I still would have to listen to people's arguments for where you put the invitational events in there.
Yeah.
The PLP, the World Cup of Pool, the World Pool Masters. Where do you put those?
I wonder what some of the top guys would think about PLP and labeling that as a major, because it's arguably the toughest event to win, just endurance wise, right? Endurance wise, you've got to play reasonably well for 7 days.
Yeah, it's got great players, and you play a lot of matches.
But in the same sense, it's also the easiest to win for that same reason. Look how terrible Albin started off 2 years ago when he won it. He won one match in 2 days and he ended up winning the event. So, and the same thing that makes it the toughest to win, it also makes it the easiest to win, because you could take 2 days off and be completely, you know.
There's our boy. I've been waiting all morning for you, Carl. What the hell? Pick up a phone, call in, whatever.
I agree.
I think hope Carl agreed with my putting the Blackpool Open down there. As a Blackpool Open.
You forgot about the China Open. I can't believe it.
I remembered them yesterday. And when I was writing the list today, I just forgot about China and Qatar. So I added those onto my list now. I replaced the U.S. Open 10 ball and U.S. Open 8 ball because those were kind of a reach anyways. But, I'm sorry. What were you saying, Chris? I got you off track. I apologize.
I can't remember. Oh, Nate was saying about Albin winning the PLP when he played terrible to start with. But I think
it's races to five. I have problems with races to five in a major.
Everybody would remember looking back at that. You could say,
right down, Carl, if you had your triple crown, Carl, would you pick a triple crown or a grand slam? And tell me what those three and/or four events would be. Calling you out. Put it up on the screen. Let's see it.
He's going to choose World 8 Ball, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going to choose the World 8 Ball for sure. No, he's hashtag 9 Ball Takeover, so he's not even going there.
He might be looking for a new job.
If he lists the World 8 Ball, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's fun stuff, fun argument. Worlds, US Open, and World Pool Masters. Okay.
Fair enough.
I mean, those certainly are the three that got enough history where you could call them that. Although, again,
I don't like the idea of calling an invite only tournament. Especially with that limited of a field, a major. I mean,
the whole historical value thing gets a little bit fuzzy with me because for years and years it was races to eight single elimination. That's a tough one for me as a major.
Just take it from now going forwards, then.
Yeah, you certainly
next year or the year after, I'm certain it's going to be the top 16 players. That's no longer an invitational. It won't count towards ranking points and things. But if you're in the top 16,
yeah, that would be fine. That would be fine. Yeah. So then you tell Ralph that his five didn't count. You tell Ralph that, Chris.
now with the Reyes Cup, right, you have now a tier of invitational events that are super significant, right?
Yeah.
You have the Moscone Cup, the Reyes Cup, and Masters.
And PLP.
MPLP, so that's like that's like its own little palette of super significant.
Yes, I mean, how many Matchroom Invitationals did you win? Okay, I that's got some context to me. I can figure that out. It's not hard to it's not hard to do.
Absolutely.
The question, the deciding factor whether or not something's a major is whether or not it makes it onto Mike's Hall of Fame ballot.
I want to get.
But that's the whole thing. I mean, with Hall of Fame, with people who vote for the Hall of Fame, everybody's got. It's like any other sport. It's subjective to the voter, right? I have different values on things than other voters do, and that's fine. That's the way it is, you know, in all sports when people vote. So, you know, mine is the way I vote.
Yeah.
So that's all. That's all that matters, and it's only one vote in 50. So it's not going to tilt the scale, but I just have my own way of interpreting someone's career.
How highly would you rate a Camel Tour win?
Back then, it was big. Those were big. Every great player, because all the top players then were American, except for the Filipinos and some of the Europeans who would play in those events. And yeah, those events were the real deal. They had the same. It was like the Women's Classic Tour in its heyday. Every event was the same 64 players, all the best players. Nobody missed one. And so each one of those events was a significant significant title. I don't classify them as majors or whatever. I look at defining someone's career from that time. Yeah, you want a Camel Tour event? That rates with me.
Yeah. I would say I'm actually currently getting a t-shirt made. It's got a photo of Mike Pinozzo.
No one should have a t-shirt with a photo with my face on it. No one. Not even Mrs. Pinozzo.
Says it's not a major.
Yeah. I'll take three.
Yeah, exactly. Well, looks like Federer snapped off a pretty big tournament. The Masters, pretty awesome to watch.
That was a great event. Top to bottom, that was a really good event.
Yeah,
I think the races made it just so much tastier.
Yeah.
Rack number 24 was incredible.
Yes, it was.
Watching them both miss at the three ball about 9 times. They both probably got. And don't get me wrong, there was Josh missed one easy one. I think Josh missed one easy one where the 8 ball was covering up. You know, it was close to covering it up, but he had plenty to go at it. Other than that, most of the shots were probably supposed to be missed.
Yeah, but it's awesome. They're kind of two-way-ish. And just about all of them, if not leaning more towards the safety end of it and just hoping maybe to get lucky. Yeah. But
it was interesting to see them kind of really, weigh the pressure of the moment and figure out when they wanted to go versus when they wanted to.
Yes, very interesting. I mean, Jeremy even pointed out that one time where he was surprised Federer didn't go after the shot.
Yeah,
it was a long kind of cut shot.
Five ball. He stopped the cue ball behind the other ball instead of set up table. I'm not mad at him for doing that.
But it's just interesting how the situation and the score certainly played a role in his decision making at that, which was cool.
And how good was that Massey kick shot to return safe from that from Fedor?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That Massey kick shot to get safe was in.
Yeah, it was great. You could tell that 12-11, they both realized this is actually where the match is going to – this is the rack.
Likely, yeah. And Josh was right because he never got back to the table.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to be the one sitting down hoping your opponent dogs the break or something, you know, or gets kicked in. Like, it's a spot to be in. I mean, it also reminds me of, like, Albin when he was double hill and broke and got – that horrible kiss in the side.
Yeah, that was just heartbreaking.
Just gutted for him because everything else was dressed up perfect. It looked like it was just, you know, he was gonna just walk his way to the win.
Yeah.
And Federer made that beautiful three-ball position shot, you know.
Onto the two ball. Oof. How good was that?
As soon as he hit it, I saw it hit the second cushion and slow drift to the third rail, but I saw it still had the spin. I was like, oh, he just got this is gonna be perfect. He hit the rail and the speed just wears off as soon as he takes the right line. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's a beautiful shot. And then just walked it in.
Did you watch the match, Chris?
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah. What's that, the fourth major in the last 12 months that's gone hill? Third or fourth?
The Spanish Open, for sure. The Hanoi Open.
European Open.
Yeah.
The European.
So brutal. And, so here's the other thing too, right? Contextually, this year, the difference between first and second place was 20,000. At Derby City, Master of the Table was 20,000. So Filler got the $20,000 bonus at Derby.
Right, and Federer got the 20,000 bonus.
Federer got the 20,000 back. So now they're even, you know?
They're even, yeah.
I texted Federer that. I was like, hey, you got your 20 G's back.
Well, I can see being, you know, Chris, you're talking about all these going hill. That's what I'm rooting for in Saudi. Hill. I don't want to see someone run away with the final in Saudi. I want to see these guys' arms start shaking when it gets to, you know, 11-11, 12-12, things like that. I want them to strap some heart monitors on these guys and see what's going through their bodies at that point.
Can we just take a moment to like think about how beautifully like typically just the 9-ball tour though, you know what I mean? Just think about them. But, you know, 3 years ago to now, like starting to really take shape, you know, everything has a strong context now. There's continuity. There's less things you're finding that are like, you know, like those little lists of things are becoming fewer and far between.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're really starting to see it kind of come to fruition.
I mean, Kyle even saying make it alternate, you know. Yeah. Some people say still saying make, you know, I like it just the way it is. I think most people do. It's just
with the break, with the break rules.
It's great. It's great.
There's room for other formats. And I think they will do events with slightly different formats,
Yeah. I've wanted them to do that, to create some kind of different, you know, we can't, change surfaces like they do in tennis. We can't change the shape of the table like they do in golf. I think they can find, and I'm sure they're looking for other ways to tweak whether, you know, maybe one tournament is alternate breaks just to change that tournament or something, or one's, you know, extended longer race or one's, said make one double elimination all the way to the final four, whatever you want to do. But, you know, just find some way to differentiate between a couple of the tournaments to either increase the difficulty or just to make it look different.
Yeah. I think one, if they could do an open event that was longer races, but single elimination. So race to 13 or something every round and single elimination.
Yeah, something like that. Sure. I mean, yeah.
As well for one of them.
Yeah. Try a couple of those, fly them, you know, run them up the floor. Pull
two, we got four sets, race to five. I'm just kidding.
But some set play or something. Yeah. Because
set play is fun. I mean, it is fun. You know, it's,
it is, but. You know, let's face it. Do you ever see Matchroom adapting something? And I thought it sounded catty, but adapting something that somebody else launched.
I thought they did something like that in the. It was it the amateur event that they might have like a.
Yeah, the Matchroom aren't running it. I think the UK, the GB nine ball guys might be running that. But there's two events and one of them set play, which is good. But in the darts, they use slightly different formats. So the world normal darts play is sets. And then for the world match play, they do longer extended races. But Mike and I spoke about it before, you know, the European Open, Hanoi Open, US Open, it could be the same tournament. You've just flown somewhere different, you know, from a player's perspective, because the formats, it's all the same thing. So some variation somewhere down the line, I'm not complaining, but some variation would be.
And not with all of them, but just take, you know.
Just one.
If you want, if you're going to do that, you've got the U.S. Open and the World Championship. If you're going to do a Grand Slam or something, take the U.K. Open and tweak it a little bit and take the Hanoi/Asian Open, tweak it just a little bit. And so now those four have something a little bit different in each one of them. And
it would be fun to see the U.S. Open be a true double elimination, just because the history.
I've been arguing that for 3 years. Like,
you just can't legislate TV scheduling for that.
Well, that's what I said. Make it double elimination to the final four, and then have a step ladder. What they call in bowling, they call it the step ladder final. Right, four plays three plays two plays one, which is essentially the loser's bracket playing their way into the winner's bracket right? So I playing the undefeated players. So you can do that with your final four for sure. You can do four against three.
Does that come across well on TV in terms of viewers understanding the format and stuff?
Yeah, very easy to understand. I like that idea because the US Open was always double elimination all the way through, which I loved. But I understand, you know, you've got a TV element. So I think you can find a middle ground in there. That would be great.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're just talking about changing things, and they're doing a great job as it is.
In one breath, we said we like the way it's all kind of gotten, like it's all normal now. Now we want to change stuff, but we're not changing ball colors or alternate break or nine on the spot or anything like that.
Orange five ball.
Just talking about little tweaks in the format to make them just a little bit different. I think makes it interesting.
Well, I think you pointed that out really well, Mike, is right. In tennis, you change, you know, some are on grass and some are on clay and some are on, you know, cement. Obviously none of the majors are on that, but you can change the tennis court a little bit. In golf, obviously besides the Masters, every single course changes every single time for the most part. You can't really change anything. You're just changing the destination city that it's in, right?
Yeah. Right.
So maybe it would be kind of fun to have just a little small tweak, just maybe for the majors.
They've considered that, and I think they've talked about it. And I know that Brandon is, tinkered around with some ideas, but you know they don't rush into a lot of these things, which is smart and which is fine. So I think we'll see that in the next year or two, a little bit here and there.
Ray, you weren't here for this discussion earlier. You had to take a call quick. But if we were talking about the majors being the UK/European Open, the US Open, the World Nine Ball, and then the Hanoi Open, Asian Open, whatever it is, starting right now, the next 50 years, do you think any of the players will get to 10 plus majors?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a problem.
If you had 4 a year, yeah, yeah, when over 10 years, you win one a year, you win twice 1 year, whatever. You know,
Shane's got six, right? Shane's got 5 US Opens. And
we're saying from 2019 onwards.
We're talking about like going forward.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you're starting right now. So everyone's at zero.
Well, the only people it really favors are the 22-year-olds.
Yeah, so. I guess.
Well, there's no other ones that have 10, right? So it doesn't really matter.
10 will probably be that first benchmark, right?
Like, yeah.
Who's going to cross that line first?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's a fun argument to have and a fun race to watch.
I think you look at, you know, if you're talking about starting now, I mean, but Shane, they give credit for five. You know, Earl's got five, but you know what I mean. And Earl won a bunch of world titles before as well, so he had, you know, that's not unheard of. You know,
guys. That's why we have to. That's kind of why we have to say going forward. Right now, Earl was a major before.
Win like eight, like a world title in every discipline or something. He had like eight. I think he has.
Yeah.
On his CBV, yeah. he's got credit for eight world championships, right? In different things: world nine ball, eight ball, you know, straight ball, whatever. So you know, 10 is hard, right? Because you got to be consistent and.
Yeah, more or less I'm saying because the crops are just so deep right now. I mean, you can go into – I mean, realistically, you look at tennis and you go into tennis and you say, all right, these are the four players that are probably going to win it. They have probably an 85 to 90% chance of winning it. And maybe there's another four players that have a 10% chance combined. And pool, I don't think that you can look at the field and say that – like if you look at the World Pool Championship –
it's the same in golf.
Yeah.
I think it's quite deeper in golf too. More so like pool than it is.
Yeah, sure. That's right. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I said golf is more like golf than that.
I mean, Scottie Scheffler was so kind of deep set, and you know, so kind of put himself apart at this point. But I agree. I think that there's realistically 25 players that can win any given major.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's what makes them special if you win one, and what makes them special if someone wins five.
That's why I think it's fun to have the conversation whether or not I don't think that someone's going to get to 10.
Whether we'll get to 10.
Starting right now, no.
Really?
Someone plays for 20 years, they're not going to win one every other year?
I think he'll get to 10, maybe maybe before the end of 2020.
If Josh Filler doesn't win one every other year for the next 10 years.
No, I see what you're saying. And obviously injuries are significantly less relevant in pool than it would be even in golf. But
like, look at Francisco's run a couple years ago where he won like, you know, what, five, six big tournaments. He almost had the four world titles all 1 year. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's possible, right? It's definitely possible. You go on a run like that and then maybe not even sustain that level, but just, you know, be close to that level or on par for 3 or 5 years. You know,
I mean, if there's somebody who has a chance right now, I think the only two players that in my mind that have that chance is Josh and Eklund.
Not Fedor?
I don't think so. Fedor hasn't won one since what, 2018? He won the
since yesterday. Level? Since yesterday.
Yeah, but I just don't consider a limited field.
You got to remember, he missed out COVID, and then he had the sanctioning, so he missed like maybe two and a half.
A lot
years.
Of opportunities. Sure. Listen, he's still,
he missed an awful lot. He made a shitload of money because of
it. Still pretty young.
Stay in America.
He's still pretty young.
Yeah, he's gonna have a legitimate chance just because he's so consistent and so. Yeah.
But he also has health problems too.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but I think he's gone and got like stem cell injections in his back and things, and he says he's feeling better and whatever.
We'll see what happens. I mean, it's it's all.
He's only 22 still. 22?
23 or 24.
No, it's 22, I think.
I'm not sure. I thought 23 at least.
Wasn't he master of the table 2 years ago? I mean, he was last year, but wasn't he 2 years in a row?
He's 23.
He's 23.
He's got to be at least 23.
Well, he'll turn 24. He'll turn 24 at the end of May.
Right.
I knew he was older than 22 because he's played in Derby City the last 3 years now.
How much, Josh? 24, 23,
24, 25.
Yeah.
So they're both still arguably they could be 10 years away from their peak still. Q Sports.
Josh is 26.
In your early 30s. There's Federal.
Josh is 26. Stem cells.
Josh will be 27 later. Josh will be 27 in October.
Willie,
he's only got about 10 years left in him.
Anybody wants to play block race for a large number, shoot me. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen
Federer's out here too.
Shout out to the guy that helped Federer for 2 hours yesterday so he could make that comment. Appreciate you.
I hope the best for Fedor, obviously, but you know, anybody who has back problems, that can be absolutely debilitating.
It's quite tall, isn't he? So the table's quite low down for him and stuff, and
he's about an inch taller than me.
There's a thing, Chris. Why don't we take some events and raise the table 6 inches?
Can we just do that? Just keep the tables
and be done with it. That could be fun.
This is 10% slope something.
I guess going back to our conversation, there are just so many players that are coming up right now that you know, the youth coming into the game right now, I feel like the fields are only going to get tougher, especially as, you know, more and more and more money comes into the game.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have it, bring it on.
Yeah, I agree with Fiddle.
Filler, like I said, I think Filler and Eklund are the two that could potentially do it. Although Eklund maybe is his focus might not be exactly there all the time. But when he's in the box and he seems to be engaged, he seems to be pretty tough to beat.
What we are lucky to have in pool, which you don't see in probably any other sport or many anyway, is you've got some of the older guys who are still winning big tournaments. Yeah. And you've got guys that are 20 years younger that are still winning tournaments. That's a huge spread, There's a lot of people in between those.
I mean, you know, Shane and David Alcaid, both over 40.
Yeah.
Both winning.
Alcaid's 47, I think.
Yeah.
It's what, Shane, 43, 44 or something?
So, not for nothing, but like...
No, Shane's 41.
41?
Alcaid didn't get to where he was playing like his top tier best until
he was in his 40s.
A few years ago. Yeah. And then you saw a difference where there was just an extra level of consistency. And he was one of those guys that I looked at as separated from the main group.
Right.
And just on the cusp of like the A1 tier one guys.
Right. You know,
just outside, but like a dangerous threat to beat anybody.
Right.
So I kind of feel bad for him with his Q change thing, because I feel like it took him so long to get there that it's going to take a little bit of, you know,
refining. That was his decision, though, right? That was self.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're compensating him for that, right? But it's tough to get there. Sometimes it takes a little longer. And pool is great because if you're physically able, like, you can hold up and compete well into your, you know, 50s. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Ralph is still playing a very high level.
Man, Ralph. Yeah.
Ralph played 40.
Efren got third at the one pocket last year, you know.
Spotty. Neil still plays a solid game.
Neil's plays beautiful. I just saw that he had a Hill final. Was it last year against Kachi?
In the Masters.
Not the Masters.
Who'd you say?
Kachi and
Neil's.
Yeah.
Was that a Euro Tour?
That was the Masters.
That was Masters, I think. Yeah.
Because Neil's had him down pretty big. I think he was up like maybe 7-2.
Yeah.
Two years ago. Because last year was Pinyi Ko.
That's right.
No. It wasn't in the finals. It was like maybe the semifinals.
Oh, okay. Maybe the semifinals last year, because then Ko played Kachi in the final.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think it was the semifinals, because I think Neil's.
You're right.
Yeah. I think Niels was up like maybe 7-2 or 5-1 or something like that, and ended up Kachi ended up making a big run and getting him hill. I think Niels actually scratched maybe on the hill or something like that.
I don't remember.
Or had a bad scratch or something like that. Something tells me there was a bad scratch in there, but I could be wrong on that. But
there is a huge age.
He got slugged.
He got slugged in there. I remember that.
I watched that. I was like, oh. No.
Yeah, I can still remember the look that Niels gave.
Oh, yeah.
When you said slug, like the face he made just comes right back.
Poor guy. Played great. Yeah.
So, Chris, let's move on to the U.S. Open. You draw Barry Hearn in the first round. Do you punish him? Or do you lay down like a good soldier?
Whoever he plays in the first round, he's going to have a whisper in their ear beforehand. Don't embarrass me and I'll give you $1,000, or there'll be something in there. We've got the UK Open coming up, and there's a footballer playing in it. So a Premier League footballer, ex-Premier League footballer, Troy Deeney. Right. So he's, I'm not sure how he's in it, but he is. I didn't even know he liked pool. So he's going to be in it. So whoever draws him first round, that's going to be pretty interesting. And then we've got Andy Goldstein and Barry playing in the US Open. I'm not against... They're big fields, 256
I have no issue with any of that.
I'm not against it at all. It would be even better if they could get like even bigger names involved. I don't, you know, if they could get Joe Rogan to play in the US Open, that would be fucking amazing. But you know, we can only hope for that sort of thing to happen. But I don't see why, you know, at the US Open they couldn't do, you know, like Efren did an exhibition match at the Hanoi Open, where they couldn't do an exhibition match at the US Open with, say, like Joe Rogan and who's another American pool player? I don't know, famous person. Not big. Pacquiao, that would be brilliant. Rogan and Pacquiao.
Well, yeah. Well, Emily even talked about, you know, wouldn't it be great if those two were the captains for the Reyes Cup?
You know, Rogan,
if the U.S. played in the Reyes Cup, you know, then it would be Rogan and Pacquiao, that type of thing. So, you know, stuff like that is good. I like, you know, more the playing actually in the event, even though they're probably only in a match or two, than an exhibition, because I don't think an exhibition is going to draw any eyeballs that aren't already on it.
No,
whereas if he's in the actual competitive match, he's in the first round, he's in the second round, whatever, then I think you can get... You can get more exhibition. Tell me the last.
I mean,
celebrity exhibition.
Mike Tyson's about to fight Jake Paul, and that's like.
So this is like, this is a thing, right? These things do happen. I was dead against it, but they are happening in other sports. So why not take it?
I mean, you're right. It is turning out that they are actually fighting now.
Yeah, they're fighting. They're fighting. Yeah. This is a boxing match. This isn't, you know, they're not going to go to, you know, a boxing match, you know, between, you know, Canelo Alvarez, somebody and some other top contender, and beforehand the treat is that Mike Tyson and Jake Paul are going to wrestle, you know.
It remains to be seen whether they're actually going to fight. Yeah, I know it's sanctioned now by the Texas Athletic Commission and stuff, but it is on Netflix. I don't see Netflix signing up to having a 58-year-old guy getting knocked out on their streaming platform. They don't need that. I just don't buy into the whole thing, but
I just feel like that's the wrong animal to poke the button on, you know.
Yeah.
Let that bear go to sleep. Let him be asleep, you know. You wake up a warrior.
Let that tiger eat.
Like you wake up a warrior, I'm sorry, man. Like
let that tiger eat.
I don't care what the agreement is, like if there is an agreement or not, but you know, that guy has instincts to destroy.
Yeah, no, first time someone punches Mike Tyson in the face.
That's it.
The exhibition goes. Exhibition gets tossed
in the cage, and the tiger's coming out. This is not going to end.
I agree with that 100%.
Oh my gosh.
But listen, I like you know these events. If it's a 256 field, that they bring someone in that could bring in some eyeballs that might otherwise watch. And I don't think an exhibition does that. You know, someone was talking. I think Jim was talking about, you know, like a celebrity pro-am. I don't see anybody. I wouldn't turn into a celebrity program. I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I mean, a charity event or something
it would be good, but
I would want to see. I mean, and they're different sports, right? Because people obviously programs
in golf tournaments all the time. The only one anyone ever
I tuned into Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning.
Pebble Beach, that's like the only thing that, you know, someone will watch.
Yeah, I tuned in to watch Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning and Patrick Mahomes and was it Tom Brady? I tuned in to watch that.
Yeah, I know, but there's nothing worse than watching bad pool players, is there? what is worse? So,
well, if
I know, watching bad golfers is a little bit rough. Too.
If we can get Charles Barkley,
funny though.
If we can get Charles Barkley on the comms, we got a chance. I mean, Charles Barkley made that pro-am for the challenge match really entertaining.
Yeah.
We need to get someone needs to get Charles Barkley into watching pool. But I hold your point. I see it. I don't think it hurts it regardless though. It might not have the benefits that we would like to think it would, but I don't think it hurts it.
Well, Chris, the thing with this soccer player, he played. Is he a pundit now, or is he a sportscaster, or is he some? Does he have some FaceTime on streams or television?
He does a bit on TalkSport, which I mentioned to you guys before. Okay, I don't know if everybody was tuned in, but TalkSport is like the biggest sports radio station, one of the biggest in the world, but certainly the biggest in the UK.
So that's the
whole comes on and that's he does some of that sort of stuff. But he was the player manager of a lower league football team up until a couple of weeks ago. He lasted like 2 weeks. He did a very famous interview. You can look it up on YouTube. But basically, the interview is his team got absolutely battered. He did an interview after the game, slating all of his players, and he got sacked like 2 days later. So you can see that on YouTube. It's pretty funny. But he's an interesting character. He's had a really interesting life. He's been kind of, you know, prisoner as a youngster and redeemed himself. And he's an interesting guy.
Did you see Carl's comment? He says, "I watch bad players every open event."
Yeah, he does.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's what 256 brings into the equation. But that's, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. So, well,
I'm happy for Federer. It was a great match to watch him take down.
And yeah.
It was interesting, too. I watched some of the BTS stuff on the social reels, and I saw that Johan was there. I thought that was really cool.
So who was there?
Johan was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was interesting.
Federer, and then I saw him post the image with Johan and him getting the trophy. It's nice to see him, like, you know, working with the players directly, especially guys that he has, like, history with, you know. And I just think about, too, like being there, you know what I mean? Being in that position, like it's good to have somebody that's in your corner, you know.
I said this the other day, like if you have a player captain now and Moscone Cup, I would have no problem with Federer having Johan fly into Florida and be his wingman for a couple of days, or a Scott Frost going down there and being Shane's wingman for a couple of days and just, you know, instead of having one person try to be the psychologist for all the players, have each one of them have their own, you know, whatever security blanket with them to keep them straight.
Well, all the pro athletes have that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, watch a tennis match and they show the, the box over on the side and there's like, you know, a team of physicians and psychologists and massage therapists and
the whole squad. But you know, they're out there winning $4 million for
right. Well, animals. You know,
we're on the way.
Yeah.
Right? We have $1 million purse coming up in Saudi Arabia. That's gonna be so what's the schedule now? We have Scottish Open, then UK Open is it
Scottish Open's got a stout little field.
I mean,
Are you playing that, Chris?
It's strong.
No, I can't. I'm working for myself now, so I can't get that time off. I'm going to the UK Open, though.
Okay, if you're working for yourself, it seems like you can easily get the time off.
Do you know what? That's what I thought. I thought Scottish, I'd get more time, but no.
UK Open, is there anything between UK Open and Saudi? Any kind
of... It might be something small, but I don't... Yeah, nothing significant.
There's a small ranking event, I think, here in Virginia. Okay. On stateside.
Is there anything in Saudi before the World Championships? Is kind of a get into town early tune-up type of thing?
No, but Jason's doing one in Dubai.
Dubai afterwards.
After the event, right.
Yeah. After the event. But no, there's nothing in between.
So you have any of this pool room?
Yes.
Yeah.
I imagine, yeah.
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 Yep.
Is he really moving to Dubai? I mean, he made that post a month or so ago about leaving the States and moving to Dubai and whatever.
I know more about that than I should. So I'll refrain from answering.
Okay.
Who knows? Well,
good talk.
But whatever, you know, whatever he wants to do, the world's his oyster, isn't it? He's the most famous player in the world, probably. So he should take advantage of that. I see he's going on like a little tour thing at some point between June and July. So. And he's taking kids and stuff with him, so
he's making
the most out of things. He definitely should.
He's playing great right now too, Jason.
Yeah, he's playing great. He looks great. And he's, like I said before too, you know, he's one of those guys who can seems to almost thrive on the more balls he's having to juggle at the same time, the better he does. the more he focuses on the one thing that he has to get back to do. Right.
Yeah. You know,
he's one of those people who can really use that to his advantage. And he's a guy who keeps himself really busy with the business and, you know, cooking a burger, changing cloth, going, doing exhibitions, doing lessons with somebody, doing a booth at Super Billiard Expo, you know, and then going out and playing jam up pool. I mean, there's not a lot of people who can do that. It's just got that. He's kind of wired a little bit differently. He can handle that kind of thing.
Which is if you just kind of stand around with him, maybe talking to 10 different people, you know, at the same time, I'd just walk away. I wouldn't want to talk to anybody, but it seems like his mind's always doing something. So,
yeah. Yeah,
it's easier to focus when you get all those lucky rolls.
I'm going to be up in Connecticut, I think, this weekend. So I'm going to probably stop by US 1 Billiards and check it out and see his pool.
Yeah.
Get yourself the ramen.
The ramen's good?
Oh,
food's unbelievable.
That ramen will turn your life around, Ray.
Sounds good. Yeah.
It will make you someone.
There's a great kitchen at Hard Time Billiards in California, Sacramento. They have a good kitchen. And then there's a pool room in Florida, Strokers. And the owner has a part business with a shrimp company.
Wow.
That gets fresh gold shrimp every day. And they have a proper chef in the kitchen. Just tremendous. So
getting hungry.
Have to compare.
12:52. I haven't had lunch yet.
So yeah, so I guess Scottish Open, UK Open. Is Scottish Open going to be on the Matchroom YouTube?
Probably. I don't know. They stuck it up on there's a good streaming company up in Scotland who do all of the events in McGoldrick, so it'll probably be on there.
Okay.
Because sometimes I've seen people that do that also pass off a stream key and it ends up on a Matchroom YouTube or like.
Yeah, they might well do that. I can't remember if they did it last year or not, but I remember watching the final. It was Jason and who? Jason won it, right?
Last year?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember who Jason beat last year. But...
For the Scottish Open?
Yeah.
He didn't win it last year. David Al-Qaidi won it. He beat...
No, he won the Jacoby.
The UK guy that like never plays
Phil Burford, but that was the Jacoby. That wasn't the Scottish. That was the Jacoby.
Okay. Never mind then.
I can't remember who Jason played in the final.
And just to be clear for Nate Tam, Ara's mom from Korea makes it, and it is stupid good.
Yeah.
So it's actually she's from Korea. It's real Korean food.
Korea grandma delicious. Food. It's the best kind.
Korean grandma food, yes.
It's the best. if you get certified by the grandmas, you're in.
Yes.
Totally in.
So it is home cooking. I don't even remember. Did the Scottish Open?
Viktor Zielinski. There we go. Nice one, Carl.
It's good to have Carl on retainer. And decide to answer all the questions.
The Matchroom said
Matt Poland. Normally this is Matt Poland, but apparently he's slacking today.
Yeah.
Well,
Carl, this year's Scottish Open has a great field. Carl, is it a major?
Okay, let's. Are we good at the Masters? Are we ready to move on?
Oh, you're playing, God, Carl.
Boys is playing Scottish. So they got a celebrity in the Scottish Open, a celebrity in the UK Open, and a celebrity in the US Open.
This is the start of the comeback.
It is the start of the comeback.
The takeover.
He wants that World Cup of pool sport. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
The Boise takeover.
Hashtag yep. Boys takeover.
Easy game. All right, let's move on to the Reyes Cup then. I guess, Mike, let's hear your thoughts on it.
Great. I'm excited. You know, we had a really good interview with Emily the other day, and some of what she mentioned was really interesting. That I really like the way they're looking at it. They're not looking at it. It's not a team. Whoever wins the Moscone Cup plays Team Asia. That's not going to happen, which I think is really smart. You know, they haven't made a decision yet, but it could be just alternating years. One year it's US, one year it's Team Europe. I like that a lot. And I like the fact that it's not, you know, like this year it's not automatically the team from Team Europe last year. No player right now is on Team Europe for the Reyes Cup. No player. So I like that part too. I like, you know, getting some new different faces. And the fact that they're the three qualification spots are for the Reyes Cup and then for Moscone Cup, are based on different end tournaments, right?
Yeah.
So you could very well have a different lineup for the Reyes Cup than you would for the Moscone Cup than you would for the Reyes Cup. I like that too. You've already got two possibilities with two wild cards for the two different events, but even the qualification spots may go to at least one different person. I think all that's really cool. She talked about keeping it in Manila for, you know, the first X number of years to establish it there. I like that idea too. I'm going for sure. That is going to be a great event. And I think that people will be surprised by the number of fans that are going to turn out for that.
You couldn't, there's nowhere too big for that, is there? Someone said it the other day online. There's no arena too big to hold that, the Reyes Cup.
I don't know. I think, you know, it's always going to be ambitious to say, okay, we're going to, you know, we'll put at least 3,000 in there for every session. Okay. Let's see that happen. I'd love to see that happen. Be curious to see how many Asian pool fans come from Taiwan, come from, you know, Indonesia, wherever else in Asia they're going to come from, or if it's all going to be all Filipino fans.
I just don't see how anybody is going to be able to get a ticket for that. I just think that's going to sell out in a second, and it's going to be...
I hope so. It's going to be huge. One of the arenas there was a photo that popped up on 77 Billiards, whatever site that is, of Emily in, I can't remember the name of the stadium now. It's where the Thriller in Manila was. That was one of the places that they scouted.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, cool stuff.
Well,
yeah, Reyes Cup is going to be great.
Yeah. I remember seeing a stadium that was filled up for a snooker.
Araneta, yes, the Araneta Coliseum.
What was that? Was that the Ronnie against one of the Taiwanese guys? And it was just like packed.
That was Marco Fu. That was in Hong Kong. That was 6,000.
Yeah. 6,000 people.
That was 6,000. But the good thing about the Philippines is basketball's like their major sport over there. And a basketball.
They've got some great arenas. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Football. Yeah. Perfect.
You know, like a 5,000-6,000 seat arena, something like that, with some balcony. It'd be killer. Awesome. And she's working with the Puyat family.
They're a great company.
So, you know, they've been the primary benefactor for Filipino pool for 35 years.
Yeah.
And it's a very well-connected, you know, respected family in Manila, period, from their steel business and all that. They're going to do things the right way. It's going to be fantastic.
Who do you like for like a Team Asia?
You know, rankings.
Just pick your five.
Yeah, we talked about that with Emily. I would have liked to have seen for the first year a hand-picked Team Asia, but I don't see how you could avoid both Cole brothers.
Yeah,
I don't see how you avoid Carlo Beato.
I agree.
So where do you go after that? Wu Shaxing is a sexy name to bring up. You know, I don't know. I mean, that would be great. If you're looking at points right now, you know, Yap is the front runner.
Yeah.
A lot of tournaments between now and then. And really, all it takes is one run from, you know, a Dang or someone like that at the World Championship. And you got your spot at... Yeah. You got your spot on the Reyes Cup because money is going to throw everything out of whack.
Yeah, I can't imagine them not having at least two Filipinos on the team.
You would think so the first year. Yeah. I don't know where I'd go after Beato, to tell you the truth.
It's
tough. It's for me. It's like I see three guys maybe, based on like match and participation stuff and just how they finish. Like Raga's a name for sure.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Aranas.
Aranas and Chua, obviously, because of the
World Cup,
you know,
and Chua. Those would probably be the three names that I would look at first. Although Raga, I haven't seen Raga in a year. Who knows? I haven't seen. I want to see these guys. I know they're all going up in mass to play at the UK Open. They're all going in mass to play the World Championship. So there'll be a lot of Filipinos in both of those fields. And yep. I think we'll know a lot more after those two events.
Yeah. And then there's also, there's like five or six other guys too, that are just there that are stalwarts in the Asian stuff. Like, you know, Oi has been continuously really solid and playing yeah. well, running deep recently. Even like Feliciano, you know, he's coming out quite a bit and he won, you know, an open tournament already and, you know, typically runs pretty deep. You know, there's a lot of guys that are just like,
yeah, but I agree with you. I think that you'll probably end up with two Filipinos. Where do you go after that? You know?
Yeah. It's going to be a fun event. And to see like, you know, we saw Vietnam Open, you know, the Hanoi Open last year, huge, like awesome stadium. I think you're going to see at least that, you know what I mean? In Manila.
Yeah.
Especially if they have the backing and support of local government, which I'm sure they will.
That's really an exciting event to think about. And I was not a big Reyes Cup fan at the beginning, just in terms of what kind of impact it was going to have, because I just didn't see natural rivalry between Asia and Europe, mm-hmm. you know, or where you would have that type of fanaticism, win or lose, getting crushed or
there's more of that amongst themselves. Like there's more of that with like the Taiwanese and Filipinos.
Yeah. Right.
Back in the day, they used to have bounties at tournaments. If there was tournaments hosted in Taiwan, there would be bounties on Filipino players and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, you know, you would earn extra money for knocking them out of the tournament.
Right. But I've kind of come around to the fact that I think there's enough hardcore pool fans in Asia that want a piece of the Europeans, that want to, probably because they've been kind of on the outside looking in while we all talk about the Moscone Cup 12 months a year for the last decade. Yeah. You know, they're probably tired of it. It's like, give us our chance and we'll show you. And so I think you'll get a lot of fan support and a lot of excitement generated around that.
Chris, who's your five?
For Asia, if I had to pick five? The best team you could pick, I would say, would be both Kos, Chua, Chan Junlin, Wu Chaqing.
No Beato?
I'd go for Chua. I like Chua.
You like Chua over Beato?
He's an unbelievable shot maker for me. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, so what team would you want to see?
Me?
Yeah, or is that the same team?
That's the same team.
That's going to be my option. Well, I only ask
in it somewhere. Like if they're gonna do it, I would like to see Busty in it somewhere. But I don't think he's active enough will.
I only ask because the team that I would want to see. Okay, so the team that I think should be there: Beato, the Koh brothers, Aloysius, and then. I just don't think that the Chinese players play enough, so I wouldn't pick one of those. And I'd probably go with Chu as well. But if you're asking me what team I would want to see, I want to see Chua, Aloysius Yap, Nayuki Oi, Efren, and then Robbie Capito.
Wow.
Because then you're hitting all five areas, big areas. You're hitting Hong Kong. You're hitting Taiwan.
I'll take Europe and spot you a couple of games. They're all great players.
I was gonna say who's like super weak there. I mean, don't get me wrong, you're right. I mean, there's definitely a difference between Robbie Capito and Nayuki Oi versus FSR.
Wu Xiaxing and Beato.
sure. But I mean, if you actually put out there the actual like the most stacked Asian team, I don't know that Europe has a great chance of competing outside of their experience in that arena, right? If you stack them up.
I think the first year are going to be the favorite because of that.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's got to be a language barrier issue for the Asians as well, because some of those guys can't talk. You know, they don't have a common language to speak. So, you know, it's going to be pretty difficult if you get like the little Ko and like fucking, I don't know.
Nayuki Oi, right?
Nayuki, also, you know. It's gonna be difficult. There's gonna be a lot of pointing at the table. Here, leave me here.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of
I just think as far as star power and as far as like hitting all the markets, I think Nayuki Oi would be really great to have. And
I'd like Nayuki Oi as a player, but a lot of the attention and focus he got was more for off-table kind of antics.
Absolutely.
And things.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if I'm... I think that detracted from what a good player he was. And now he's not faded, just everybody ebbs and flows, don't they? And now he's not...
He made a world 10-ball final.
I was going to say...
I know, but you know... You look at
it was a pretty good argument. He's playing better now than he ever has in his career.
I don't think so. No, he doesn't have the
consistency correct that he had a few years ago.
Yeah,
his mechanics. His mechanics don't hold up under, you know, the pressure maybe as well as.
He is a great player. There's no doubt. But just yeah, I don't know what it is with him. I just wouldn't. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm talking from like a pure marketing standpoint of hitting all five regions. I mean, you could definitely make an argument instead of Robbie Capito, maybe you could do Dong or Dong or something like that, or Wucha Ching instead, you know, something like that. But
why would you put Capito in?
Just from Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's, you know, that's it's more or less just China now, isn't it?
His hair is perfect as well. So
he does have perfect hair. Beautiful. And he's very nice and has great English.
Yeah.
Just kicks off all the boxes, mate. Well, I mean, if you just pick the five best players, you might not even leave Taiwan. Right?
Agreed. It's just Taiwan and Philippines, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just Philippines and Philippines and Taiwan at that point. You have Chang Jung Lin, the Koh brothers. If you want to do the five best players, you might not even leave the Philippines.
Yeah.
You could absolutely make an all-Filipino team that's probably just as strong as...
And to Chris's point, there's the problem that Asia is going to have is synergy, you know? Is that right.
You don't have that, you know... palling around.
I even see that to some extent with the European team, but you know they at least have English to fall back on. But I've seen
everything's easy when you're winning, right?
Everything's easy. The early days of Moscone Cup, there were some little issues here and there with the European team too.
Like even certain
laughter and smiling is a common language.
Yeah, even when you have certain combinations of like just there's cultural things. Like I remember Katsu's first year, it was like a little bit of a, because he's such a personality type is different, but there's also like a cultural thing that's a little bit different, you know, with Albanians versus like, you know, Spaniards or like German and then English, you know, there's like,
right.
Yeah,
there's things they got to navigate through. And that kind of has to go through the iterative process and the team building side of things. But I think Asia will have to figure that out too, you know?
Yeah. And that's why it might take them a couple of years to understand what that's about. So that's why I say I think it depends on which European team goes in. If it's the European team that played in last year's Moscone Cup, they'd go into me as a pretty good favorite.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how David's playing.
But I still think there's that when they – if those five same guys got together at the same time and went down the Manila to play, David's game would be on point.
Yeah, I think
– I just think that it would be. I just think, you know, that – so – same with Alvin.
Equipment is equipment. I mean, if you can't get comfortable with the equipment, that's just not something that you could find in the middle.
But he'll have so much comfort in who he's playing with and how much they help each other out because they've done this so many times that I think that'd be less as an issue. Like it was this past year. Didn't play great this past year, but you know,
he had still, his old equipment though.
Still good enough. Same with Fran, whatever. So.
Marlonito has mentioned Lee Van in the chat, and Lee Van's awesome. I mean,
yeah, Lee Van's a great player too. Yeah,
it's like maybe the most underrated player in the world. Nobody ever talks about him.
It's like we talk about the Filipinos all the time, and Lee Van just always gets left out. I mean, the guy is
unbelievable. Yeah.
And he's got a good relationship with a lot of, like he said, he's got a good relationship with the Koh brothers and pretty nice guy as well. And
sorry, Ray.
Tough as nails. The guy is really, I mean.
She has not determined what kind of captaincy there's going to be for Reyes.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
I believe I would bet that they're going to have appointed captains, but I think they'll be more ceremonial than Johan or something like that. I'm sorry?
Just so Efren could be captain? Is that?
Well, I don't even know if Efren would be captain. I mean, if they can get Manny Pacquiao, they would do Manny Pacquiao. But I think that they would I think there will be an established captain as opposed to a playing captain. Although someone on the team is probably going to be the de facto playing captain because of the ceremonial, you know, wave the flag captain. So
I like that's just a guess. I like the idea of keeping Efren as somebody you're honoring and not necessarily making him part of the
That's true too.
Yeah. Because
put him in the throne in the front row of the stands, and he's
who we're there to honor because of what he's built in his game, and like it's just a privilege to play in front of him like that.
Agree, 100%. Feels
more appropriate. And then if the Asian team loses, it's not in some way like a slight, like Reyes. You know what I mean? It's like the Reyes Cup was won, and Efren's going to present the trophy to like that feels like.
I think you're right. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I would kind of keep Efren away from the actual like.
Yeah. Good point.
Competition elements of it, and just let's honor him. You know,
sure.
We didn't get that chance with Moscone, you know, but we're on. This is like the cup is a memoriam to a great player, so we're just honoring, you know, his contribution to the game.
Throw him on the VIP couch with two six packs of Miller Lite.
Yeah, Coronas, he'll be happy. He'll be great.
And a chessboard.
And then he'll laugh at you for missing a kick and take it in. You guys are terrible.
There should be no jump cues in the Reyes Cup.
That's a good point too. I've heard people talk about that. That would be funny if they did that.
And the audience should be able to bet on the rail, like put money down on everything.
I see. Yeah, they walk up to the table and mark it with chalk about what the
throw some chickens out there. Be great.
You got to let the chickens loose as well if you're going to do all loose. That.
Yeah,
that's right. That's some cats chasing down.
Yeah. Something. So anyhow, yeah, I think it's gonna be a fun time. It's gonna be a beautiful year for Matchroom.
Oh, it's gonna be great.
But Mike, you really think that Team Europe is gonna be heavy favorites?
I don't know about heavy, but they to me would be the favorite just because this is so new to five Asian guys who don't hang around together and may have a language barrier and don't really know about team bonding. I don't know if any of these guys ever played a team sport in their life. Who knows? So I just think that the experience that the Team Europe players have in a Moscone Cup type situation is way more valuable than some people might give it credit for. Now, again, that changes a lot if all of a sudden it's three rookies in an arena like that this year for Team Europe. Then Jason can do all the wet nursing he wants. It's not going to be as easy as if he's got the five guys. So some of it will be dependent on. To me, some of it will depend on who ends up being that team.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking like, so what if there was five Filipinos and you had Levan Corteza, Anton Raga, Carlo Beato, Johan Chua, and James Aranas?
I would agree with you that probably makes them a stronger bet to be able to fade the situation than a mixture, probably. But, you know, would I rather have both Coes on my team than Anton Raga and Michael Feliciano? Probably. Probably. Because they'll be able to talk to each other just fine.
This is what I was thinking about earlier. Because you can field so many teams in Asia from independent countries, that I think it opens the door for who's going to qualify for that outside of just the ranking stuff. Like, for instance, like a Chinese team or Taiwanese team, you could do like, you know, the both Ko brothers, Chang Jun Lin, Wu Cha Ching, and even Yap, right? Because Yap speaks the language natively and plays there all the time. Like, that could be a team. Then you have a Filipino team. Like, you have Raga, Chua, Liotto, Dennis Arcoyo, and Lee Van or something. You know what I mean? And like,
Anton Raga.
Yeah, exactly. And so now they duke it out. And the winner of that goes to, you know, is the one who, you know what I'm saying? But then you have to also think about the Vietnamese team, maybe the Japanese team. And they, you know, they do like a, you know, they battle it out like single elimination kind of tournament all the way up. But anyways, it's just interesting.
At some point, we'll get to a 5-player World Cup of pool. Where you have these countries load up, not just two players, just load them up. Let's have at it. That would be pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first time we've even mentioned Dennis Arcoyo.
Yeah, I don't see. I don't
think, out there. Dennis is still out there, don't.
I think he's chasing the Chinese eight ball now, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah. Did you see what they announced the other day for all of their tour events?
Mm-hmm.
So for each of their tour events, for each of their tour stops, there's going to be two tournaments. The winner of the first event gets 220,000. The winner of the second event gets 85,000. That's more than snooker money now.
Yeah, yeah.
220 grand for winning a normal tour event. It's fucking bananas.
God bless them.
Yeah.
I'm
very happy.
I'm starting to mark my pockets right away. It's gonna be fun. All right, guys. Well,
Nate. Yeah. Good.
Only other news, I guess we're talking about would be the Moscone Cup tickets are going on sale in 9 days.
Yeah.
Get your credit cards ready.
Okay. Buy a couch.
We have 36 people in the queued up group.
Wow.
So if anybody else wants to go and be a part of our group.
Where are you sitting so I can make sure to buy seats somewhere
else? Yeah, it's the other side of the arena.
Wherever. Last year,
he was sitting smack dab in the middle of Team Europe section. I'm like, oh. Perfect sense.
They put us where they put us, you know? They put us where they put us.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you want to be a part of the group, make sure to reach out to either myself or the podcast page, and we can potentially get you in to our group.
Oh, Pia Filler. She was announced as the 128th professional today.
Yeah,
so that's a question. Maybe somebody knows that I don't. Did she get that as a ceremonial thing, or did she qualify in that spot?
She would have been pretty close to qualifying anyway. It might have just fallen on her. But regardless, she's entered a lot of the matchroom events.
She has. Yep.
And if anybody deserves it, however it's happened.
Yeah, it's better. Take your swing.
And if it wasn't for having to forfeit like 7 times to her husband on the B side of tournaments, she probably would have qualified even higher.
Yeah, agreed.
She's forfeited so many events to him.
She's a great player. I watched her play at Derby. You know, playing strong. Like
this is the only way that women are going to be able to compete with men in the long run is playing in the men's tournament. So yeah, I say,
agreed, 100%.
Fair play to her. You know, if she hasn't got in on full meritocracy, then it was pretty much 90% meritocracy, I would say. And she absolutely deserves it. So fair play to her. I hope more of the top lady players start whenever Q school comes along, however they do it, they actually step up.
Yeah.
I was hoping Kelly was going to get in.
But Kelly's not playing any of them.
Yeah, you got to play in the events to earn.
Yeah.
So Pia, you give her credit for she's gone in there and taken her cuts.
So yeah. Some of the ladies have entered the ones they've been invited to, you know, getting a free role and what have you, but to actually put your own money down and, you know, this is a different, it's a completely different story. So fair play to her. I think hopefully that sets off more ladies doing the same thing.
Yeah. I'd love to see Cheska throw her cue in that arena.
Spinning Chen. Like I want her.
She's back. She played the WPBA event.
Yeah,
she's playing at least again. That's good to see.
First time I saw Cheska was at the U.S. Open in Norfolk.
She's a
great player to watch. She's like, man, she's
a ton of heart.
Like watching a combination of Francisco and Jason Shaw.
And like to Chris's point too, like you know you earn opportunities. You know, like
right.
You put yourself in enough chances. You knock on the door enough, like. Eventually, you're going to get a door to open for you. You know,
right.
What I mean? It's not just like whim, like out of the blue, like oh, you know, it's not a publicity thing, really, because like the soccer player who's going to get invited, like that's a publicity.
Correct.
Thing,
right? Correct.
Sure.
But Pia's getting in there and playing and earning her lumps, and it shows when she goes to compete in the women's stuff. You know, she's at some big spots in other tournaments, and you know, won big matches. That's how
It's going to give her an advantage for definite, and Matchroom weren't going to continue out handing out the invitational spots to ladies. That was a limited time thing. So, you know, it's a shame that none of them stuck out a little bit longer, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And it makes sense. You know, she's with Josh at every tournament anyhow, for the most part.
Best practice partner in the world. So.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. It's like a
when you're a woman player like P and you go to an event, you know, you're going to get a softer draw than you do at home.
Right.
That's not a bad start.
Yeah. Not many people can say that for sure. Yeah. And she's tough. She's got the disposition. You know, she holds up.
Her,
like, you know, the girls that I watch, like, you know, Christina, I think, is also just mentally tough. Margaret, too, I've been really impressed with. And I played some with Margaret, like, in Wisconsin a couple of times just in practice. And she's coming up and playing super tough, you know? Like, these girls are really – I don't even call them, you know, I don't classify them as girls. I just say these are pool players. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
If they're in the men's event, right, they're a pool player. They differentiate them. They set themselves apart if they go and play in the ladies' events and don't compete with the men. That's what the differentiator is. So, yeah.
Good on them.
I like it.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Anything else that's worth mentioning?
No, but your cat has a nice tail.
Yeah, well, that's like...
Say hi.
Say hi. Oh, God, cat people.
Yes.
Mike is no longer on the podcast.
Well, guys.
All right. Then let's close it out there. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. We'll give a shout out quick to our sponsors. Jacoby Custom Cues, our title sponsor for the podcast. We love them and you will love them as well. If you would like to get your hands on a nice Jacoby Custom Q, you can reach out to us. We are a vendor. Also, Lippmann Lights, Horo Tips, Onboard Sportswear, Digital Pool, Salado, Billiards Digest, go Mike, and Insight Performance Coaching.
Beautiful.
Thank you to all of those sponsors that allow us to continue doing what we are doing.
Yep.
And with that, we will tune off for this week. So thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
See you later.
Bye, guys.